Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to get a veterans legislative update on the recent session, and we learn about the Minnesota National Guard's Warrant Officer Program. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Since its birth on June 14, 1775, over a year before the Declaration of Independence, the United States Army has played a vital role in the growth and development of our nation. Since then, the Army has been at the forefront of defending our country's freedom. It all started in the spring of 1775, as colonial troops were about to confront British troops near Boston, Massachusetts. Recognizing the need to enlist the support of all of the American seaboard colonies, the Massachusetts Provincial Congress appealed to the Second Continental Congress, that time held in Philadelphia, to assume the authority of the New England Army. Congress voted to adopt the Boston troops and resolved to form a committee to bring in a draft of rules and regulations for the government of the Army. When George Washington received his appointment as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army and took command on July 3, 1775, there is no way he could have imagined what the Army would become. Soldiers have fought our wars, the American Revolution, the War of 1812, the Mexican-American War, the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World Wars I and II, the Korean War, Vietnam War, the Gulf War, and now the Iraq and Afghanistan Wars. And today, soldiers stand ready around the world. The Army's birthday is a recognition of our history, traditions, and service to our nation. It's also the day for us to imagine what it will grow to into the future. Happy birthday.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Ben Johnson currently serves as the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. He joined the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs in November 2014, and his current responsibilities include oversight of the department's legislative agenda with a direct influence with all veteran legislative initiatives and liaison to the veteran service organizations here in Minnesota. Ben, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
Ben, I understand you served in the United States Navy.
That's correct.
Can you tell us about your service?
Certainly. I enlisted in the Navy in 2002, withdrew from the University of Minnesota following the events of 9/11, and was able to participate in a couple of deployments, one on a destroyer through Central and South America. A second deployment was with a mobile security unit deployed to the northern Persian Gulf to protect infrastructure, Iraqi oil infrastructure, and military sea lift command ships operating in the Persian Gulf.
So did you enjoy your time in the Navy?
It was a fantastic experience. I was really happy with the opportunity to see parts of the world that I hadn't been able to see otherwise.
And Ben, I understand after you got out of the Navy, you went back to school, finished up some college, and went to law school.
That's correct. 2008, I finished my undergraduate degree. My wife and I had an opportunity to move home to Minnesota, and I was accepted to William Mitchell College of Law starting in 2008 and received my JD 2011.
Well, congratulations. That's a lot of work to do.
Thank you.
Ben, how did you end up arriving at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
Well, actually, after a couple of years clerking in the legal field, I had the opportunity to sort of reevaluate my options, and was looking at the Minnesota Jobs website and saw an opportunity with the Programs and Services Division at the MDVA, applied for that role, and started working in the State Soldier Assistance Program, managing applications for grants and funding.
And then you met Mike McElhinney.
That's correct. Mike was the legislative director at the time, noticed my experience and some of my interest in working in the legislature, and recruited me to come downstairs and work from the legislative department. Mike was promoted to the chief of staff position at MDVA, and so this session was my first running the legislative office.
All right, Ben, it's early June, and the legislature is out of session unless they go back in for some reason. And I know that there's always a lot of activity around veterans issues, so I'd like you to give us a rundown on what did pass, not what may pass, but what we know was done.
Certainly. The bill that contained the most veterans-related legislation was the Omnibus Supplemental Budget Bill. Additional funding for 12 programs, $845,000 worth of additional funding, including some one-time money for various initiatives. All of these bills came through the legislative process, were heard as individual bills, and then rolled into the Omnibus Supplemental Budget Bill.
So about 12 different items were in this?
Yes, sir, that's correct. Included in the $845,000 worth of funding of interest to veterans were money for the AMPRS Veterans Voices programming. This is a public broadcasting program that probes the experiences of veterans. Veterans Voices at the Minnesota Humanities Center is a $95,000 appropriation. Money for rent subsidies, additional money for the State Soldiers Assistance Fund. This is grants for housing and health assistance. Money for a veterans health study and additional money for a veterans interim housing study. In addition, there are some policy provisions that were included. Changes to the veterans preference includes some changes that we feel better position veterans to receive opportunities to be employed with state and local government.
We're speaking with Ben Johnson, the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Ben, you started telling me about veterans' preference. Can we dig into that a little bit and tell me what's changed?
Certainly. Within veterans' preference, there were some changes that we hope will streamline the process. Veterans' preference allows veterans to receive the benefit of their military service. Some of the changes were in situations where a veteran is served a notice of termination. There was a reduction in the time whereby a veteran would make a claim for veterans' preference protections, reduced to 30 days. A change in the process in those localities where there is not a civil service board to hear a veterans' preference claim. Previously, there was an three-person panel, and what's changed is the elimination of that three-person panel in favor of an arbitrator through the Minnesota Mediation Board.
And Ben, just so our listeners understand, can you explain veterans' preference to them?
Sure. With regards to the changes for this session, the veterans' preference allows a veteran who is facing termination from their employment for a state or local government position, allows them the opportunity to petition the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs for protections to either rescind or turn back a notice of termination or potentially get it reduced to maybe a letter of reprimand or something like that. It's a protection for veterans in their employment. There are other provisions with regards to hiring, but for this session, they focus mainly on the termination provisions and trying to streamline it and make it less costly for employers, faster for veterans to get through the process, and hopefully allow more veterans the opportunity to get interviews for state and local jobs.
So were these changes that were requested by your office?
They were not. These were changes that have sort of been in process for a couple of sessions, trying to fix language that came out of last year's session that was not quite right. However, we did have a lot of opportunities to work with the authors of the legislation to make sure that it was something that we could live with and that benefits veterans throughout the state.
So you did have some opportunity for input over at the Capitol.
Most definitely. Commissioner Shalitoe actually met with the author of the bill and was able to talk through the process and understand what he was trying to do. The author himself is a veteran and a member of the National Guard and was really trying to improve the process for veterans. And once the commissioner was able to speak with the author, we were able to sign off and say this is something that we could support.
So these veterans' preference changes were clarification and streamlining what was already in place?
Correct. The big one for us was language defining who pays the cost of the process. It was sort of ambiguous, and it now included in this law was a change to make sure that it's clear that the employer pays the costs, and if the level of the veteran's termination is reduced to maybe, like I said earlier, a letter of reprimand or something, that the attorney's fees would be paid as well.
Ben, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to dig into a few more of the things that happened during this legislative session. We're talking to Ben Johnson, who is the legislative director of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Baseball is part of the fabric of American life. One of the American Legion's most successful programs through the years has been Legion Baseball. In Minnesota, we have over 325 teams in nearly every community in the state, involving about 5,000 student athletes. Five of our Minnesota teams have won the National World Series. This is Peggy Moon, past department commander of the American Legion. Check out your local team and come to a game. It's some of the best baseball you'll ever see.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In the last segment, we were talking to Ben Johnson, who serves as the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And his current responsibilities include oversight of the department's legislative agenda, with direct influence with all veterans' legislative initiatives and liaison to the veterans' service organizations within Minnesota. And Ben, when we finished that last segment, we just finished up talking about the changes in veterans' preference. Do you want to run through some of the other, the rest of those 12 items?
I'd be happy to. In addition to those items we just talked about, there's a couple of studies that were funded. The legislature requires the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs to study, quantify, and describe unmet mental health needs among veterans. It's an opportunity for us as an agency to look for opportunities to better serve veterans with mental health issues. We think that it's an area that we could certainly see improvement within the state, the veterans population, and this is an opportunity for us to start figuring out how better to address those needs.
Study, learn, and adjust.
Exactly.
Okay.
Another one is to study the feasibility of partnering with a nonprofit to address disabled veterans' housing needs. Currently, the veterans' homes are in fairly high demand, and there is a waiting list for positions in the veterans' homes. This is an opportunity for us to study ways to partner with organizations, in particular nonprofits and throughout the state, to better address housing needs for disabled veterans.
And Ben, I understand the legislature was considering adding two homes and about 150 beds, but that stuff didn't make it this year, did it?
That's correct. There were talks about funding the construction of two new homes, one in Montevideo, another in Bemidji, and additional funding to staff those homes for operational costs, but that didn't come out of the session.
So we've still got veterans waiting to get into the veterans' homes and no place to put them.
That's correct.
Okay, what else?
Well, the big one this year, and it's a surprising addition to the supplemental budget bill, is a tax provision that is a huge benefit to veterans, something that's been in the works for nearly 20 years. It's a tax exemption for pension and compensation pay for military service. This is something that various legislators have been working on. One in particular, Representative Bob Detmer, has been working on for his entire 10-year career here. And in fact, included in the tax bill that came out of the House last year was a provision capped at $20,000, $1,000 per year of service. So $20,000 of pension or compensation from the federal government for military service would have been exempted from your income taxes. At the last minute this year, included in the omnibus supplemental budget bill, was a provision to exempt the full amount of pay or compensation received from service, received from the federal government. Included is a full subtraction for all pension compensation or other retirement pay from the federal government for service in the military. Under Title 10 of U.S. Code, there are sections that identify retirement pay. Included in this subtraction is enlisted members and officers who performed the required years of qualifying service, enlisted members and officers of reserve components, including the National Guard, Army National Guard, or Air National Guard, who were performed or were credited with required years of qualifying service, eligible combat-related uniform service retirees, members retired under 10 U.S. Code Chapter 61, which is a retirement or separation for physical disability, and individuals including surviving spouses or dependent children eligible for the Federal Survivor Benefit Plan. Pay or compensation received for any of these provisions will be exempt from taxable income.
From state taxing?
Correct.
Okay. And this bill was substituted at the last minute. That $20,000 provision is gone. This is unlimited. Whatever pension you get from this type of service is now going to be free from state taxation. And did they backdate that to the first of the year?
I believe it goes into effect July 1st of 2016.
I thought I saw an effective date of December 31st, 2015. But you're going to have more information on all of this at minnesotaveteran.org. Just tap on the news tab, and the details will be in there. So some of this is still coming out and still being clarified, and we think we know what this is, but it passed in any case, which is great, and we'll get more details on that as we go. Did we miss anything, Ben? What else? I thought I saw something about minor changes to the veterans driver license designation language.
Correct. A couple of other small provisions that, as you know, Real ID was a part of the discussion this year. One of the things that that was changed is how a veteran's designation might be on a driver's license. Now, currently, there is no designation on a driver's license. This was just a change to allow a symbol like a V for veteran or something like that, rather than having the word veteran printed on a driver's license. But it has yet to be implemented. They're still working on the process for driver's licenses to reflect service. Another change is the inclusion of veteran-owned businesses in the Minnesota Emerging Entrepreneur Board, and a state procurement to certified small businesses that are majority owned by veterans, an opportunity for veterans looking for smaller contracts of $25,000 or less to more easily access those state contracts.
All right. Overall, how would you rate this session? Did we do pretty good on veterans issues, or are there still a bunch of issues left out there?
Well, Tom, there's always opportunities to do right by veterans. Considering it was a short session and that we had a split House and Senate and the governor, I feel that veterans in Minnesota did really well this session. There were a lot of positive outcomes, especially with regards to the supplemental budget bill. There are still opportunities to do more for veterans. There are obviously initiatives every year that don't make the final cut. So the job is not done. But as far as the 2016 session went, all in all, it was pretty successful. One area of concern, obviously, is some things that didn't get done. The veterans' homes always have expenses associated with the asset preservation, significant projects that could see improvements, and any opportunity to get state funding for those projects above and beyond the standard operating expenses is greatly appreciated. So that's an area that we would love to see. We would love to see some gains made.
And Ben, we mentioned earlier that you work closely with the veteran service organizations. When the commissioner was in the studio last, he called the Commander's Task Force, which is the president of each of those veterans organizations, his board of directors. So you work closely with those folks to try to set an agenda each year. Is that right?
That's correct. We utilize their experiences and membership throughout the state to generate ideas to propose to the governor things that would benefit veterans in all corners of the state, from 100% service-connected disabled veterans to their families to those that are coming back from active service. The Commander's Task Force and the groups that they represent really do have their fingers on the pulse of veterans in Minnesota, and it's an opportunity to understand what needs are being met and what areas we could improve. So we ping them for ideas all the time.
And we'll talk about that before Veterans Day on the Hill next spring and make sure that all of our listeners know what's on the agenda. One last thing, and it's something that's just bothered me for a few years. The bridge out there is closed, and now there's only one way in and out of the veterans home, and I don't think that's safe. What happened with the bridge funds? Did any of that get passed?
Not this year. The bridge, the historic trust bridge at the Minneapolis Veterans Home campus, is a second point of access to the home. Money to repair and refurbish this historic structure was included in the governor's recommendations and was something that was in the bonding bill. Unfortunately, the bonding bill didn't make it out of the session, so it's something, again, that we'll come back for next year if need be.
So for our listeners out there, and I'm speaking as host of Minnesota Military Radio, they need to provide those funds to repair that bridge so that there's two ways to get in and out of the veterans' home. Get on the horn, call your legislative officials up at the Capitol in the state of Minnesota, and tell them to pass the money for that bill so that we've got safe roads and a safe access to the veterans' home out there. Ben, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, Tom, I just want to thank you for the time, and I want to thank all the constituents in the state of Minnesota, all the veterans that communicate with our office to try and get things done that benefit veterans and their families.
Well, Ben, good work. We're looking forward to having you on maybe this fall or next spring again and find out. Every year we go back and see what we can get done, and every year we try to update our listeners. So thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
That was Ben Johnson, the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to learn about the Minnesota National Guard's Warrant Officer Program.
Today's Yellow Ribbon Company Spotlight is Morehead State University. As a student-centered university in northwest Minnesota, Morehead State prepares students to participate in the workforce of today to create and lead the workforce of tomorrow. Morehead State University's Veteran Resource Center welcomes veterans and service members to their campus. The center provides counseling, GI Bill certification, tutorial assistance, and a strong social support system for veterans and currently serving students and their family members. The Resource Center also connects employees and students to
to assist with support efforts by the local Moorhead Yellow Ribbon Community Network. Moorhead State University has been a Yellow Ribbon company since August of 2012 and is honored and proud to be making a difference to service members, veterans, and their families. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to learn about the Minnesota National Guard's Warrant Officer Program. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Chaletot.
It's known fondly as the Star-Spangled Banner. Old Red, White, and Blue, Old Glory, Stars and Stripes, and the list goes on and on. The American flag is recognized across our country to far-reaching nations, even second and third world countries. Our flag stands as a beacon to the world, representing independence, liberty, patriotism, and freedom. It is a symbol of enduring hope. Each year, June 14th is recognized as Flag Day. Although this is a little known and even less celebrated day, let's commit to spending time reflecting on our flag. Although it's made just of cloth, our flag represents all of those throughout history who have stood against our enemies, braved unspeakable conditions and sustained injuries. Some even gave their lives. Let us fly it proudly with honor and loyalty. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Chaletot. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said earlier, we're going to learn about the Minnesota National Guard's Warrant Officer Program. And joining me now is the Senior Warrant Officer Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Chief Warrant Officer Kip Knutson. Chief, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom.
That's kind of a long title and introduction, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes. I've been in the position about a year working for the TAG, and I just love the position and just a lot of challenges and a lot of rewards along the way.
Now, Chief, on the Army side of the house, there are warrant officers, but I understand on the Air side, the Air National Guard, there were warrant officers 40 years ago when I was in, but they're all gone now, aren't
they? Yeah, that's true. The Air Force used to have warrant officers. The last one retired was in the early 70s, so they used to, but they all switched over to either senior NCOs or commissioned officers for those duties.
Yeah, Chief, if memory serves me correctly, we know that the Army National Guard has officers and enlisted. And in between, they have what's called warrant officers. And as I recall, you told me that a warrant officer has the ability to stay within one job description and be kind of the consistency in the force. While the officers come and go every few years and the NCOs get promoted, the warrant officers are right there.
Well, the warrant officers are also right there, but they're also the subject matter expert, the technical advisor and leader. Yeah, they have a certain career field that they stay in, and they hone their skills and they learn more skills, but they're also the technical troubleshooter on certain subjects, advisor to the commander, and problem solver, and they also lead certain groups and stuff. So they also command. So they're very, very valuable. That conduit, they kind of stay in the organization and kind of keep things going and make sure that things are functioning and things need to work.
So as a company or a battalion or a brigade commander changes out every few years, that chief warrant officer is still there and aids the new commander in figuring out a little bit about what's going on in the past and what's going on in the future and where do you stand.
Yeah. So the warrant officer is there as the advisor to the new commander. Say, hey, let's know what needs to be done. Let's advise them the status of the situation and how to fix things. So he's always there to advise and make sure that the operation runs smoothly and things get done.
Yeah, and how many spots do you have within the Minnesota Army National Guard for warrant officers?
We have 263 warrant officer positions across the state in different technical fields.
And, Chief, how many of those positions are currently filled?
We have 228 of those positions are filled across the state.
So one of your duties as the command chief warrant officer is to recruit and fill some of those positions?
That is correct, yes. And so that's a constantly busy, never-ending job as we need to seek more talent and to grow that field. There's constant changeover. And there's new demands. We have a new cyber branch coming up that's being filled by the Army that we need to fill signal positions for.
Now, the warrant officer positions, you recruit from the NCOs, from the enlisted forces in the Army National Guard?
Yes, that is correct, Tom. We feel from the NCO Corps through from their specialty MOS, or certain feeder MOSs feed certain specialties, so that's where we recruit from the NCO Corps.
Now, do you pull them just from the Minnesota Army National Guard's NCO Corps, or do you go outside and get some people coming off active duty? Where do you go?
Well, we can assess people off of active duty. So if there's a warrant officer that's on active duty that's retiring or getting out of the Army, we can recruit them at the exit stations as they out process through the military. There's a section for a reserve component. So we can recruit from there, also from other branches, other services. So from the Air Force, for example, or the Navy. We can also recruit from them and to join the National Guard too. And some of those, for Signal, if they have 4 years of documented experience in information technology, we can recruit from other branches into the Minnesota Army National Guard to be a Signal warrant officer.
We're speaking with Command Chief Warrant Officer Kip Knutson on Minnesota Military Radio. The Chief, you've said Signal several times.
Yes.
Can you explain to me in civilian terms what does that mean?
Signal is information technology, stuff that kind of moves data, that moves all your phone, your computers, your network, and all that stuff all involves around Signal.
And, sir, you brought one of your warrant officers with you today. Could you want to introduce him?
Yeah, it's W1 David Zhang. He's a new Signal warrant officer, and he works full-time for the National Guard. And, yeah, he's just great to have him here and on the air with me.
David, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, Tom.
Can you tell me, now you're a new warrant officer, is that correct?
I'm a brand-new warrant officer. I just did 6 months of training. I still have 4 more months left, and I should be done with my basic course to becoming a warrant officer, chief warrant officer.
Now, what was your position before you were recruited to be a warrant officer?
Before I was enlisted, E-8, I was a master sergeant. I was a signal staff personnel where I worked on a staff and just sit in a lot of military decision process making.
And so was that with the Minnesota Army National Guard?
Correct.
And how long have you been in service then?
I've been in the service for 19 and a half years, 4 years active duty on deployment.
You know, I've made a big change and a big decision to go warrant officer.
Yes.
And your position is information system technology, so you're an IT signal warrant officer, is that correct?
Yes, Tom, I'm an IT warrant officer.
Can you tell us what are your duties as an IT warrant officer?
As an IT warrant officer on the part-time side during drill, I will be a subject matter expert. And because the Army, they have adopted a lot of tactical equipment and software and application. And I'm being the warrant officer, I have to be the subject matter expert and learn those equipment and those software to better give advices and guidance to my commander to make those hard decisions to reduce the loss of life and resources.
And you're full-time with the Minnesota Army National Guard as well. What's your job full-time then?
My job full-time, I work for our IT department for the Army National Guard, and we support around 1,000 or 2,000 full-timers, AGR and technician, federal technician, and I support them with desktop support with their computers, printers, application software issues and errors.
And keep the network working.
Correct.
I would assume that in the Minnesota Army National Guard, a lot of your IT specialists are probably on this deployment for the National Training Center rotation.
I believe there are because it's been really quiet in my office the last couple of days.
So they're using their remote equipment. They're not using the stationary equipment here.
Yes, Tom.
Chief Knutson, you've got a lot of people that just went out to California, and I would assume that a lot of the IT people and a number of your warrant officers must be out there helping with those logistics.
Sure. There's a large demand for the warrant officers also, especially moving all the equipment out there and accounting for it, and also all the IT support, because they're being tested out there on their knowledge of their IT systems to make sure that they're keeping them safe and secure and people can talk. And so, there's a lot of demand for their skills right now out at NTC.
Gentlemen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about cybersecurity and some of the those type of issues that'll be tested by active Army out at NTC rotation. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We'll be back in just a moment.
The College of St. Scholastica Veteran BS in Nursing builds on the skills acquired in the military to prepare for a career in nursing. Students receive personalized academic assessment and support. St. Scholastica offers generous financial aid, including Yellow Ribbon and other benefit programs. 89% of CSS nursing grads are employed as nurses 4 to 6 months after graduation. For more information, visit css.edu/vetbsnursing or call 218-723-5944.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking about the Minnesota National Guard's Warrant Officer Program with Command Chief Warrant Officer Kip Knutson and Warrant Officer David Young. Chief Knutson, earlier we were talking about where your warrant officers come from, and they can come from active duty, guard, reserve. They come from the NCO ranks. And off the air, you were telling me that you're looking for the IT signal warrant officers.
Correct.
And you really don't care if they have that specialty in the military or in their civilian job, so long as they've got several years' worth of experience, then they might be eligible for that?
Yes. As far as the signal warrant officers, the demand is they've opened that up to warrant officer specialists have to have a certain enlisted feeder MOS, but as far as the signal warrant officers, they do not. They just have to have 4 years of documented information technology experience in the civilian sector. So if they have a strong background, let's say, for example, they're an infantry soldier, but yet they work full-time as an IT engineer someplace, they can use that knowledge and training to advance your military career and become a warrant officer in the signal branch. So that is open.
So I'm assuming that IT, information technology, is in the military just like in civilian jobs. It's bigger and bigger and bigger every day.
Yes, very big. They've even added a whole new branch called cyber branch, which is coming out, which is actually out right now. And we're starting to field one next year. We'll start filling the positions for that.
So in addition to what Chief Jong does in taking care of the hardware and the software and the internet and all the rest of that, then you've got the whole cybersecurity issue. How do you protect it so that your right. systems can't be hacked?
Cyber has become a new battlefield. It's been out there. We fought on the seas and in the air and on the land, but now cyber has become a new battlefield as we get attacks against our networks, against websites, and all these attacks. So we have to defend that. So we've created a separate branch just for that purpose, to protect against attacks and to react to cyber attacks and defend that. So we've come out with the cyber branch, which is going to have commissioned officers, warrant officers, and enlisted soldiers.
So that whole area is going to be expanding.
That is correct, and we're going to add another 12 warrant officers with the cyber protection team, which is coming next year. So
a big recruiting effort going
yes,
on in that area.
Yes.
Now, Chief, we've had Colonel Interest on the show because the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team is now out in a lot of them out there in California at the National Training Center Rotation, which is the top of the training rotation in the United States, which is quite an honor. But when they're out there in the desert for a couple of weeks going against big army and they're being tested and things are changing every day, cybersecurity going to be part of that?
Yes, they'll be on top of the game because they're going to be testing. They're going to be trying to see if they can hack into the network, see how well you've protected your network and threats and how you react to that. And they're going to be watching that. So they're got to be on their A game out there right now because it's like a real war scenario that they're being tested on. So the skills that the warrant officer brings is going to be very critical to how successful they're going to be out there in that operation to make sure their networks work and they can talk and send their emails can be sent and their websites are up and everything's working. So, yes, they'll be tested.
So the opposition is going to try to take down the communications and take down the network and make you blind in the desert.
Nothing's holding back. No, it's going to be full. They're going to be attacking them. So they're going to have to be on their A game.
It's going to be a good exercise.
It's going to be good. It's going to be fun, exciting, and challenging and good stuff.
Well, I'm obviously biased, but I hope the Minnesota Army National Guard, I hope the 1st Brigade takes them down instead of them taking us down.
Yep, they'll do well. They're very, very well trained and very proud of the Minnesota Army National Guard. We've got some excellent warrant officers out there. So,
but Chief, we just got a couple of minutes left. I want to go back to Warrant Officer Jung. Now, you just became a warrant officer. You were in this field as an E-8. You're happy? It's a good decision?
I'm really happy, Tom. I'm glad I made this decision to become a warrant. It's going to further my education and skills and knowledge about IT. And someday when I do retire, it's going to transition really smooth to the civilian sector, and I don't have to worry about training in a different type of work where I already have the experience in training with the military.
So for other NCOs that are eligible and have that kind of training in IT and that background, you'd recommend they explore this?
I say do it quick, because it's going to get filled quick, and there's only a limited amount of slots, so you need to do it quick. You don't want to be on the waiting list.
So, Chief Knutson, if they're interested and they're listening, they should just give you a call.
Well, they can call me, or they can call CW3 James Jutinen, who's their warrant officer recruiting state. But by all means, if they can't call anybody else, call me. I'll definitely be a source of contact. I can lead them in the right direction.
Spots open, and
you
want to fill them.
We're looking. We're talking. Yep.
I would think for a young man in the Army, an NCO, to get into cybersecurity would be terrific.
Awesome training. The quality of training they get, and the career potential opportunity. This is a great opportunity for the right NCO.
Chief Jong, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
And Chief Knutson, about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Just glad to be here with Mr. Jong, a new signal warrant officer. So I'm expecting great things out of him, and he's doing a fine job. But just so excited about the future for the Minnesota Army National Guard and cyber and signal, and the opportunities that are out there for soldiers. So, and besides just being from the Army National Guard, we're also accepting if you're in the Air Force, Navy, or any other branch of service background, if you have IT experience, this is open to you also as far as being a signal warrant officer.
Gentlemen, thanks for joining us today. That was Warrant Officer Dave Jong and the Senior Warrant Officer Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Chief Warrant Officer Kip Knutson. Joining me now from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System is the Associate Director and Chief Experience Officer, Dave Miller. Mr. Miller, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to be here.
Sir, I understand that you spent a few years in the military.
Yes, I did. 34 years in the U.S. Navy.
And what type of positions did you have with the U.S. Navy, sir?
Well, I was a healthcare administrator in the Medical Service Corps, and I held a variety of administrative positions at various Navy hospitals around the United States and overseas.
Sounds pretty similar to Director Kelly. Did you two come across each other in the Navy?
Yes, we did a few times, actually.
All right, well, that makes it good to work together out at the Minneapolis VA.
Both being Minnesota boys, we connected early on in our careers.
And you've been here for how long, sir?
I joined the VA in 2011, and I worked for the VA's National Office of Patient-Centered Care and Cultural Transformation, and I joined the VA Medical Center in Minneapolis in late 2014 in my current role.
A great opportunity to get back home, sir.
Yes, it was.
Now, can you explain to me, your title is Chief Experience Officer. What does that position entail at the Minneapolis VA?
Okay, well, I'm a member of the executive leadership team here, and I really work with clinical leadership and staff across the organization to include all of our community-based clinics to ensure that we maintain a focus on a wide variety of things that impact a veteran's overall experience with our healthcare system. And, we also have a lot of veterans, a fair number of veterans, who actively participate as members on many of our committees and councils within our system. And we also have a number of survey instruments that we use to gather direct feedback from veterans, and that's a part of my responsibility. And then we take this feedback and we do our best to share it with our staff to improve what we do.
So, sir, do you participate in the town hall meetings that come up then, too?
I sure do. I sure do.
Have they been effective, and have you learned some things from the veterans?
At every town hall meeting, we get some terrific feedback from our veterans who attend, and we look forward to each one. As a matter of fact, we have one coming up the end of June, on June 20th.
And will that be at the Minneapolis Medical Center?
Yes, it's going to be at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center on June 20th from 5 p.m. through 7 p.m. And it will also include some of our colleagues from the VBA and the National Cemetery Association Administration, as it always does.
Well, another opportunity to hear from the veterans, and I hope it goes well, sir.
Absolutely.
I understand that the patient advocates report to you. Can you explain what that role is and how it works?
Sure. As their job title suggests, Tom, their role is really to advocate for our veterans and work with veterans who have, any issues or concerns with something that they've experienced with our healthcare system or the services that we provide. whether it's an administrative issue or a clinical concern of any sort, our patient advocates are available to assist veterans and connect them with the appropriate resources.
So does the VA appoint patient advocates when requested?
When requested, actually, they're full-time positions. They're members of our staff, and any veteran who needs a patient advocate or feels they need their services is free to reach out directly to our patient advocate office.
So if a veteran or their family feels like the veteran maybe doesn't have a complete grasp on what he's supposed to do, then they can ask for a patient advocate that'll give them a little extra attention and make sure things are taken care of properly?
Exactly. That's their purpose.
Sounds like a great program, sir. Are there any new projects out at the Minneapolis VA?
Well, as I mentioned, we've got the town hall coming up very soon, but one thing I'd like to mention is an area that also falls under my area of responsibility is our voluntary services program. And each year we honor our volunteers here at the medical center, and we have over 1,500 volunteers. And we have an annual volunteer banquet, which is going to be held on June 21st at the Prom Center in Oakdale. And it's an opportunity for us to recognize the volunteers who provide an incredible amount of support to our organization day in and day out. And this includes everything from our greeters and first impression volunteers at our front and main entrances and volunteer drivers and patient escorts and a host of others. But we simply couldn't provide the range of services that we have here at the Minneapolis VA without their support.
Volunteer staff out there is great, isn't it?
Sure is.
Well, sir, I'd like to thank you for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to be here.
That was Dave Miller, the Associate Director and Chief Experience Officer at the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. We have one mention today. The Tournament of Duty is a fundraising event for Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, Eagles Healing Nest, and Wounded Warrior Project. This golf scramble and beanbag toss tournament is in Atwater, Minnesota, June 25th, 2016. 100% of the proceeds are sent to the charities. To learn more, visit their website, tournamentofduty.com. We're just about out of time. Thanks for joining, listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Chief Warrant Officer Kip Knudsen and Chief Warrant Officer David Jong, Ben Johnson, Dave Miller from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about hospice care at the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System and learn about the Air Force Association. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.